Hey, Sean. Hey, Laurel.
Oh, hey, John.
Hey, John.
What's up? You guys sound kind of down.
You know, there are some weeks during all this when I just miss the way things used to be, you know? I miss the old world.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really glad we're still doing the podcast, but I miss doing it in person, you know? I miss getting coffee beforehand.
Yeah, and back in the old days, we would have done, like, a roundup episode with lots of topics, you know? Like this week, we probably would have done an episode about that new federal lawsuit that seeks to overturn local stay-at-home orders and another federal lawsuit that would force the state to send absentee ballot applications to all registered voters.
Yeah, exactly. And I feel like we also probably would have talked about, you know, Joe Biden's virtual campaign visits to Wisconsin and like, you know, the Evers administration withdrawing its scope statement for the emergency rule.
Well, guys, I can't bring back the old world.
Aww.
But I do have some good news.
What?
Yeah?
I can bring back the roundup episode.
Oh, no, John! Way. That's great!
Yep. And we've got plenty to talk about, so let's do it. This is the WPR Politics Podcast. I'm John K. Wilson.
I'm Sean Johnson.
And I'm Laurel White.
This week, a good old-fashioned roundup episode about Wisconsin state politics. And that intro music is from producer Jamie XX, along with rapper Young Thug and musician Popcan, with the song I Know There's Gonna Be, parentheses, good times, which, you know, there can be some good times. We can do a roundup episode occasionally. And shout out to Laurel's husband for the song recommendation there. You know, I guess he's into Young Thug.
Sure. Perks. There are perks to recording from our own homes. We have family members with better ideas than we have.
That's true. We got to look for the silver linings and control what we can control, you know? We can do fun themes again. That's a thing
sure.
We can do.
You sound convinced. Mm-hmm. Yes, we can have fun. This is all very fun. What we're going through is great.
Fun.
Smile.
This is all fine.
So our roundup episode, where do we want to start?
So let's start with the latest legal developments in the safer at home cases, because we talked about this a lot. You know, just to update, you know, last week that the state Supreme Court struck down Wisconsin's statewide safer at home order. And they struck it down because they said that the Evers administration, specifically Department of Health Services Secretary Andrea Palm, exceeded her authority when she issued the order without going through the legislature's rulemaking process. In other words, without giving the legislature a chance to give it an up or down vote or giving the legislature veto power. So the statewide order was struck down. We alluded to this in last week's podcast that local orders started to spring up in its place. Some of those local orders were rescinded pretty quickly over concerns that they were potentially illegal, but some remain, like the one, you know, in Dane County, for example, another in Milwaukee. And so now you have this federal lawsuit by 17 Wisconsin residents that alleges that these local orders violate their rights under the U.S. Constitution.
Yeah, and I think it's important to note, too, that there was a state lawsuit challenging the statewide stay-at-home order that sort of transitioned to being about these local orders now as well. So we've got two lawsuits going, a federal one and a state one, both going after these local orders now.
Both saying essentially this violates the state and U.S. constitutions respectively.
Yeah.
Right.
And then the one that Laurel mentioned there is, you know, it hasn't gotten much attention for obvious reasons. You know, there was the other lawsuit filed by the legislature that ended up striking down the whole order. But the one in state court asked the state Supreme Court to get involved in this case. And they have since sent basically a letter to the court saying, hey, our case is not moot just because the overall order got struck down. There's also these local orders that are raising similar issues. So, yeah, you have two cases now, one in state court, one in federal court. And as of now, you know, the local orders continue, and Attorney General Josh Call has said they are legal as long as there are no, he urged local governments to be cautious about criminal penalties for the orders, which the state Supreme Court was critical of.
This newest lawsuit, since we haven't touched on it before because it's new this week, who's bringing it exactly, and what is it alleging that the stay-at-home orders violate specifically?
So 17 people, kind of from a variety of walks of life. You've got a protest organizer, congressional candidate, a pastor, salon owner, butcher, baker, candlestick maker. Now that they're not actually in there, but you got a lot of businesses that are saying that these local stay-at-home orders are damaging their businesses. The protest organizer saying, look, we still can't protest in Madison because of the Dane County order. Although we all saw the protest, and they protested before without any criminal penalties. I mean, there were no arrests. And you know, churches saying we can't freely worship, salon owners, you know, the congressional candidate saying I can't circulate petitions because of social distancing, just all in one way or another saying that it violates their First Amendment rights under the U.S. Constitution in some way.
And where does that stand exactly in the process of the lawsuit?
So as we're recording this podcast now, the federal case has just been filed. You know, there's really nothing more that we know other than it's been filed in federal court. The lawsuit that we alluded to before the state Supreme Court, they have not yet said, justices have not yet said whether they will hear that case or whether they will dismiss it. So that's where things stand. It might be a good time here to, just in case, throw it to our future correspondent, Future John, to update us on any Friday afternoon legal action. Future John?
From the future, I'm Future John. As of Friday evening, there were no updates to report in the lawsuit challenging local stay-at-home restrictions in Wisconsin. But Friday afternoon, health officials in Dane County announced that they would loosen restrictions on businesses and gatherings starting Tuesday. Now back to the recent past.
All right, that was Future John, always there for us when we need to keep up with courts who like to issue everything on Friday afternoons, making our jobs and everyone else's more difficult. Thank you, Future John.
Maybe not everyone else's.
But. Maybe not everyone. Maybe most people are unaware that the court likes to issue stuff on Friday afternoon. But I am acutely aware and live in panic every Friday afternoon.
Well, since this is a roundup episode, do we want to move on to the next thing?
That's how it works. Look at that.
Yeah, let's do it.
Free from the burden of sticking with a single topic. We just move right on.
It's just like the old world.
Just like the old world, exactly. Yeah.
So where do we want to go next?
Well, there's a lot, I think, to unpack with election news this week. Wouldn't you say, Laurel? Like a whole lot.
I would agree. I would agree. So since we're kind of on the lawsuit train right now, let's stay on that track and just get the lawsuits out of the way.
We're frequently on that train.
We are often on. We're frequent flyers.
Commuters. Yeah.
Yeah.
We need like a discount pass for that train.
We do.
So talking about lawsuits, there's a lawsuit that has to do with absentee ballots and the upcoming November election that was just filed this week. This was new. It's a federal lawsuit that is looking to get an absentee ballot application. So not a ballot itself, just the application to get a ballot sent to all registered voters in Wisconsin. So that's something that's going to kind of work its way through the process. But as that was filed, there was also a meeting of the Wisconsin Elections Commission to discuss doing this, you know, the sending of these applications without any kind of legal requirement without a lawsuit telling them to do that. And Sean covered that meeting, and it was kind of, I spent a lot of time with the Elections Commission before the primary, and Sean's been spending a lot of time with the Elections Commission now. And they did a thing that they did a lot back then, which is not agree about what to do.
Yeah, for
how you have a committee with an even number of people on it.
It was designed that way in the very recent past. So it replaced the Government Accountability Board, which was full of retired judges, and Republicans did not like the outcomes they were getting from that board. They created a new board that was bipartisan by design. You know, if the board's going to do anything, it's going to take Republicans and Democrats agreeing on stuff. And sometimes on big stuff, they don't agree. Surprise, surprise, surprise. Who saw that coming? Not on everything, but on issues that are big and very, very political, you get a lot of 3-3 votes. So we're starting to see that for the next election here.
So the proposal was one that would have sent these ballot applications to every registered voter, right, Sean? And then the pushback was from primarily the chair of the commission said he likes the idea of sending these applications out, but he didn't want to send them to everybody. He wanted to send it to a more defined group.
Yeah, so the money to send out these ballot forms would come from the federal CARES Act, that $2 trillion plan signed by the president in late March. It set aside money for states to conduct safe elections. And so staff at the Wisconsin Elections Commission was saying, we saw what happened in April, a record number of people cast ballots by mail. But where they ran into trouble was people requesting ballots kind of at the last minute, or people unaware of how to do ballot, request an absentee ballot. And so what they wanted to do was send this mailer to 2.7 million voters who have not already requested an absentee ballot for August and November. That would have cost about $2.1 million. They also wanted to spend about $2.6 million on local money for local clerks to offset their increased expenses due to the surge in absentee voting. This did not just sail through the Elections Commission. Not at all. And they have officially put the issue off to talk about it again next week. But they seem to be coming at it from different perspectives here. Dean Knutson, the Republican chair of the commission right now, says he wants a narrowed list because, one, he doesn't think that the state should send absentee mailers to people who already have a valid photo ID on file. So just a little background there. I mean, we have a voter ID law in Wisconsin. It requires you to show a photo ID when you vote in person at the polls. Also requires you to produce a valid photo ID when you request an absentee ballot by mail. You know, so people who requested in the last election, if they did it online, they had to like take a picture of their driver's license to send and upload it. He's saying that if the state already has those people on file, doesn't need to send them an absentee ballot application. So how many voters is that? I didn't know this. It's more than a million voters that he's talking about carving off of that list.
Basically arguing that they've already theoretically participated in the process of absentee ballot voting.
Yeah, he's saying that they already know how to do it, and so there's no need for the state to mail them something to tell them how to vote absentee. So if you're starting to carve off a lot of the 2.7 million voters who the state was proposing sending these absentee ballot applications to. And, you know, he's making these proposals with, just remember, there's, as Laurel discussed, there's this federal lawsuit out there. It was filed this week that is asking a judge, and in this case, it is Judge William Conley, the guy who was very involved in our last election, asking the judge to force the state to do it if the state won't do it itself. So if we get a 3-3 vote here, they're going to go, the plaintiffs are going to go before this federal judge and ask him to get involved.
And while we're talking about the Elections Commission, before we move on to the next part of our roundup, real quick, the Elections Commission also came out with a report this week that had some interesting numbers about the April election. Do we want to talk about that real quick?
Yeah, there was a lot in there. Laurel, was there anything that kind of stood out to you in that report? We don't have time to get to it all because we're doing a roundup, but...
Yeah, I mean, I thought one thing that was pretty interesting was the number of ballots they singled out that were processed because of that extension to April 13th, which was, allowing ballots to be counted as long as they had that, now we know controversial postmark of Election Day. There were tens of thousands of ballots that were able to be included that came in after April 7th, but had been postmarked on that day. So I thought that was pretty interesting. You see, sometimes we get these court rulings and they're a little bit abstract, but to know that there was that number of voters that were directly affected by the federal court's ruling, I thought was pretty interesting.
Yeah, that was the one that stuck out to me, too. And, mm-hmm. and again, this was Judge William Conley, who has the case that we just talked about. It's essentially the state's election system is in his hands if he doesn't like the way that the Elections Commission rules on it. I know it's not that simple, but he now has evidence before him that the ruling that he made led to 79,000 people getting their ballots counted that wouldn't have otherwise. So that is kind of, you don't often get that type of a tangible number put to a court ruling. And here we had it in this case.
Well, shifting gears now, you guys want to talk about how Joe Biden was in Wisconsin this week, but not really in Wisconsin?
Yeah, let's talk about that. The advent of the virtual campaign visit, which is not a visit at all.
Man, I could not wait when I was covering this week to talk about this on the podcast because it seemed like such good podcast material. Because sometimes, we talk about just how things are kind of surreal or different or kind of what the experience of covering something is like more on the podcast than we would in maybe, other stuff that we do for work. And I just could not believe, there were two things that Biden did in Wisconsin on Wednesday. The first was a round table in the morning, and it was kind of like a, that classic Zoom call that you see where it's like the six tiles and the different people participating in this round table where, each had their own tile, and it was Biden and Congressman Ron Kind and then some community leaders from Western Wisconsin and the head of the Farmers Union group. And so that didn't seem quite as unusual to me, I think just because we've gotten more used to that kind of call and, it was a conversation, what have you. The thing that was really weird to me was the actual virtual rally, which was meant to target Milwaukee area voters. And that happened in the afternoon. And it was just like this series of speeches from one person to the next, all just, video conference, just, speaking from a screen. And there was no, of course, audience reaction. There was no, that kind of energy that there normally is in a political rally. Joe Biden was standing on his sun porch or something. At his house, there was a flower basket.
You commented on the lovely flowers in the background.
They were really lovely. There was this flower basket with these really pretty pink flowers, and you could hear birds in the background and in his yard, I guess, or property. Because he's in Delaware. He's following his state's guidelines to be at home. It was just so surreal. It went from him to Tammy Baldwin spoke, and Baldwin was sitting in a room where it was just a white wall behind her, and she had clearly just printed something out of a computer that had the Biden logo on it and taped it to her wall. But you could see it was just a piece of paper taped to the wall. And I don't know. I I was just like, what a weird time we live in. How different it would be if I, because we've all covered a lot of rallies, how different it would be if you were actually in an arena with thousands of people versus, you know, seeing pieces of paper taped to walls.
It kind of took me into one of these, like, what does it all mean sort of moments this week. You know, as we cover these rallies, and sometimes I feel like, God, what are we doing here? They're just going to say some canned statements and like pander to Wisconsin, but you got to be there because they're in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
But when it's a virtual event, then you really start to feel like, what am I doing? You're not even here, man. You're just saying that you're in Wisconsin and I have adjusted my day for it. It's hard to imagine all of 2020 playing out that way. But
what does it mean to be in Wisconsin? Is it all in our heads? Is it always
exactly like exactly?
People kept welcoming
him to
Wisconsin.
Just a state of mind? I know, that's so ridiculous. Like, don't gaslight me. You're not in Wisconsin.
Yeah, people like Tom Barrett was part of the rally, and he was like, we were happy to welcome Vice President Biden to Wisconsin.
Stop saying that.
And I
Stop
was like,
saying
he's
that.
Not. You're messing with my mind.
I'm not accepting that.
Who was theoretically watching this rally?
Anybody. I mean, it was streamed on his website. So anyone in the world could watch this rally that was targeted at Milwaukee. I mean, they said it was in Milwaukee. It was something that they, you know, obviously had Wisconsin politicians and stuff. It said at various points, kind of like a YouTube thing does or like a Facebook Live, how many people are watching. And it was usually around about 2,000 people. But there's no way of knowing, at least for me, where those people were from. If there were people from, you know, Iowa or, you know, Nebraska watching his Milwaukee rally.
So if these are the new rules, since we have a podcast, I think we should just like... We're coming at you live from Antarctica, everyone.
Yeah.
Good to see you all out there. Shout out to the penguins.
This is how we can do travel during COVID. Yeah, I would really, I'd rather go to, you said Antarctica. My first thought was Aruba, so we both went with A's.
Okay, let's change it. Shout out to Aruba. A virtual podcast from Aruba. Hello, Aruba.
Hello, Aruba.
Weirdly, there are still penguins listening.
I don't know. They love the show, you know? Yeah. They love the show.
So he clearly was not actually in Wisconsin, but you said that, you know, in the old world, when people would come to Wisconsin, they would talk about Wisconsin things. Did Joe Biden at least talk about Wisconsin things during his fake Wisconsin rally?
He talked about Wisconsin things. He talked about more kind of focused on rural issues and rural communities in his event, the roundtable event in the morning. In the afternoon, he definitely touched on that again during the rally, just kind of talking about the things that he would do differently. He was very critical of President Trump's trade policies and said that he believes the, you know, trade policies and resulting export tariffs have contributed in a big way to Wisconsin's dairy farm closures in the past few years. So he certainly talked about that. He talked about things that he would do to support Wisconsin farmers in a different way. He also talked about, just briefly, you know, he did mention Foxconn, something that we're used to people mentioning when they come in. He mentioned President Trump's role in that and was critical of the number of jobs that Foxconn has created so far. So kind of a Wisconsin centric thing there. I think a big part of the rally, though, was not necessarily Wisconsin focused. I mean, he was talking about coronavirus response and the things that he thinks Trump hasn't done very well in terms of, you know, he accused him of playing down the seriousness of the virus and doing so to kind of prop up the stock market and how that was Trump's priority. So he got kind of some more broad statements in that really could be a rally from anywhere, which is kind of what Sean was saying earlier. You know, they kind of say the same thing everywhere they go with little bits peppered in to localize it. And I think that was kind of the same. So really, it was a very different kind of rally, but in a lot of ways, exactly what we would expect.
And have we heard any whispers about President Trump doing any sort of virtual Wisconsin events? I mean, I guess he has been sort of traveling around to some different states, you know, touring factories and stuff in an ostensibly non-campaign capacity, but, you know, still making it out to swing states. He was in Michigan this week. And I guess Vice President Pence was in Madison a few weeks ago. But are we expecting them back in Wisconsin really or not really anytime soon? Do we know?
We don't know. We don't know. I mean, I saw a quote on Twitter without any context. So I'll repeat it here because that's responsible. It was from a reporter that I know about Trump wanting to like kind of get back to the rallies. Those are his thing, you know?
That's not surprising at all. I think that's, yeah. I mean, that was such a, such a big part of his brand, you know?
Yeah, yeah. But a rally in an arena is like exactly not what public health officials are saying we should do right now. So is that going to change this year? I don't know. I don't know. We always, also in Madison, we always would have like a really big rally or two from the Democratic candidate for president because we can pack them in Madison. It's hard to imagine that happening now, given where people are at on large gatherings, especially in Madison, that they'd want to come together by the thousands and pack in to like, you know, one of the streets around the Capitol for a picturesque rally. Doesn't seem like that's going to happen right now. But as we say many times on this podcast, this is the first time we've experienced any of this, and so we don't really know.
Maybe Bruce Springsteen will be in Madison after all in 2020.
He'll do a Zoom call. He'll be like, hey, shout out to, it's good to be here in Wisconsin. Like, no, you're not in Wisconsin. I know it. Prove it.
And so to finish off our roundup here, we'll go with the piece of news that clearly, you know, has been on everybody's mind, that everybody's been talking about, the Evers administration deciding to pull back a proposal for an administrative rule for safer at home guidelines.
Yeah, I mean, how many conversations have you had this week about withdrawing that scope statement? It just seems to keep coming up, right?
Yeah, okay. All scope statements all the time.
it's very wonky, but really significant. And this would have been the first step in, you know, there was talk for weeks about the legislature wanted to have a seat at the table for crafting the next stay-at-home order, whatever it would be. And the state Supreme Court, in its ruling, striking down the first stay-at-home order, or the stay-at-home extension issued by the Evers administration, said, you know, the governor and the legislature can no doubt work this out. I'm sure they've been talking. Well, they didn't work it out, right? And this is sort of the formal ending of that.
Yeah, I mean, it was basically the Evers administration doing what Republicans had been asking for. Right. Saying, mm-hmm. you know, you have to go through the rules process for a statewide stay at home order. And so the Evers administration submitted something. But then Republican lawmakers said, we don't really think we need a rule covering the whole state.
Well, I mean, I think they were a little more forceful than that. You know,
yeah.
I believe that the title of the press release from Republican State Senator Steve Noss, one of the a co-chair of the Joint Committee for the Review of Administrative Rules, the subject line was "The Empire Strikes Back." So that's how they viewed the scope statement from Andrea Palm, which was indicating that they were going to go for another statewide order. And I thought when Evers withdrew that, maybe that was a sign that they were negotiating. You know, like, well, we'll take back the overall order and do something that Republicans are more aligned with. But he said, no, we're just not going to waste our time. It was clear that they're not going to support this, so we're not going to waste our time with it. And so if you're wondering, like, is there a replacement being negotiated for the statewide order that the state Supreme Court struck down? I suppose there always could be privately in negotiations between the governor and, you know, the assembly speaker and the majority leader of the Senate. But as far as we know, the answer is no. They're just kind of done for a while.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's important to note that Republicans said that they were interested in having a state rule if there was a flare-up of cases or if there were flare-ups of COVID-19 in Wisconsin.
Yeah, if it reoccurred.
So they didn't completely, you know, rule out, using this process to do something through the state. So it's possible that they could be talking about that, like Sean said, and that's kind of, that would be, I think, where conversations would be headed and kind of what they would be surrounding, but we just really don't know.
So you mentioned the talking point from Republican lawmakers about, you know, whether or not a flare-up occurs or COVID comes back in a more serious way. I mean, just speaking about the virus and testing results and stuff, it's still here. Wisconsin is still seeing new cases. Do we have any sort of clarity about what, you know, a more serious flare-up or, you know, resurgence would look like in their minds?
I think that was one of the first questions that we had when Republicans made that statement about flare-ups. And that was something that never really got answered, because that was brought up at the very beginning of this process, and then the process got kind of halted, right? So we never got far enough down the line to get any clarity on, you know, what sort of threshold would be there for Republicans, what sort of constituted a resurgence. So I think, you know, that's not a number that really exists right now, or a metric that exists right now, certainly not publicly, maybe privately as they're talking about this, if they are talking about it, but definitely not something that we know about.
Well, I guess if we get any more clarity on that, we can talk about it maybe in another roundup episode, but more realistically, in a long episode about the ongoing news situation about COVID-19 as it affects Wisconsin state government and politics.
Are you saying we're not going to do this again? Was this just our one-off roundup? Is it where we pretended to revisit the old world, but really we're still here in COVID land?
We're not in Aruba.
We are not in Aruba.
Oh, dang.
All or right. Antarctica, for that matter.
All right.
Well, Sean Johnson is WPR's Capitol Bureau Chief.
Laurel White is WPR's Capitol Reporter.
And John K. Wilson is our resident politics nerd.
It might be Aruba, Antarctica, Argentina, or Azerbaijan. You won't know where we're coming at you from, but we will be coming at you almost every single week if you subscribe to the WPR Politics Podcast. It's available on Apple Podcasts, Google, Stitcher, Spotify, and many other podcast apps. While you're there, leave a rating or review to help other people find the show. And of course, you can catch up on all of our past episodes anytime at wpr.org/politics.